It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome, welcome. I'm going to start us off with the quote of the day. The two most powerful warriors are patience and time. Patience and time. The two most powerful warriors are patience and time. I think that's to give credit to Leo Tolstoy for that quote. And the reason I bring it up is because here we are at the end of the year. We have all the stuff. We have Hanukkah coming up. We have Christmas coming up. We have year in this and all these parties. And sometimes our patience wears thin, right? So just be mindful of that. The two most powerful warriors are patience and time. Don't let all the year-end activity and holiday festivity beat you down. All right, let's get our party started today. Francis Jackson joins us. Francis Jackson is an attorney who specializes in disability law for those seeking veterans disability benefits and Social Security disability benefits. He's a founding partner of Jackson McNichol. He has been featured on CBS, NBC, Fox, ABC affiliate networks around the country. He most recently appeared as a guest of Ben Glass on the Consumer Advocate Show, discussing benefits for veterans and Social Security disability benefits and how his practice allows him to make a difference in the lives of people facing disabilities. He has been quoted in USA Today and is listed in Cambridge Who's Who's. Mr. Jackson was honored by the National Academy of Best-Selling Authors with a Quilly Award in 2012. He is a contributor as a joint author to the Amazon best-selling book, Protect and Defend, where he wrote about protecting one's right to veterans' disability compensation. And in 2017, Mr. Jackson was inducted into America's Most Trusted Lawyers for his outstanding work in disability law. Francis Jackson, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Bert, thanks so much. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Absolutely. It's always good to have you here. And, I think that, I've said this before, I think that the work that you guys do there at Jackson McNichol is important to our brave men and women that sometimes find themselves fighting the U.S. government to get the benefits and that they deserve after coming back from defending our country. So I wanted to kind of start off by getting kind of a review, if you will, for this year. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff that you and I've talked about. So, you know, maybe get kind of recap for us the significant developments in compensation for our veterans that have happened this year.
Sure. Well, probably one of the most significant things that's happened, Bert, is the changing of the guard, if you will. As you remember, Secretary Shulkin was tweeted out of office and was replaced by Robert Wilkie. Wilkie has some background with the military. Father was in the military, and he actually was born on an army base in Germany. But he's mostly participated in the reserves rather than regular service, and has held a bunch of posts either with Republican senators or in management kind of roles. He's sort of an efficiency expert kind of guy, and so it's not really clear yet where he's going in terms of really doing things for veterans. It's clear that he's trying to make the VA operate more efficiently, which is certainly a challenge in and of itself. Beyond that, we really don't know. But there have been a lot of other developments, both in Congress and in the courts.
All right, so let's talk about that. So what has happened in Congress and, you know, that's significant? Talk about this.
Well, it's been sort of an odd year in Congress. The outgoing chairman, well, in many ways, but that wasn't my intent. But the outgoing chairman of the Veterans Committee in the House really made an all-out push to put through a bill that would entitle Navy veterans who were not on the landmass in Vietnam to the presumption of exposure to Agent Orange. And if you remember, many, many years ago, we had the Vietnam War.
Sure.
Those of us who are in their 60s and up remember that. And during that war, we used a defoliant called Agent Orange, which we sprayed in incredible quantities all over Vietnam. It went into not only the landmass, but obviously also into the groundwater and into the water off the coast. Now, what has happened is the VA has determined with lots of medical studies that Agent Orange is bad for you. It causes lots of health problems. And Congress has created a presumption that if you have those health problems and you served on the ground in Vietnam, then the VA is automatically responsible to give you benefits for those health problems. You don't have to go through the usual steps of proving that your particular health problem was caused by your time in service. This is a shortcut.
Gotcha.
That shortcut does not apply if you were in the Navy, unless you actually set foot on the landmass of Vietnam. So what has happened is all these guys who were on various Navy craft offshore and who were exposed to this stuff in the air, were exposed to it in the water that was taken in and distilled for drinking water and for, you know, washing and all the other things that we do with water, are not given the benefit of that presumption. And so it's very hard for them to prove that their diabetes, for example, or their prostate cancer or their lung cancer or whatever the condition is, was caused by their time in service. So the outgoing chairman of the House committee really went all out, pulled out all the stops, called in all his political favors, and got a unanimous, now that's pretty amazing in this Congress, a unanimous vote to pass a bill that would make the Navy veterans eligible for the presumption that if they served off the coast of Vietnam, they get this presumption that their conditions were caused by Agent Orange, and all they have to prove is that they have the condition and how severe it is.
Right.
So big deal. And, I mean, can you imagine a unanimous vote in this Congress?
You know, that is like a miracle. It really
it is.
I mean, it's difficult to ever get a unanimous vote, but especially in this Congress.
Amen to that. But then the bill went on to the Senate, and two Republicans held out and said, no, this is too expensive. We can't afford to give benefits to our veterans, even though we've promised all these benefits to veterans. So the bill fell short and did not pass. And that's the end of that saga in Congress. The one other thing that happened in Congress that it's just really not clear yet whether it's good or bad. Congress, as you know, established an oversight committee for the new appeals modernization program that President Trump signed into law just after he took office. And the oversight committee was charged with determining whether or not the VA was ready to implement this whole new appeals process. And it's complicated. The VA had to make a lot of changes and propose regulations and generally put things in place for this. And the latest review in Congress was to determine whether or not the VA was ready to roll this out on schedule in February of 2019. So far, it looks like Congress is thinking that, no, the VA is really not ready to roll this out. But, you know, that's where we stand at the moment. Obviously, it's not February yet, and we'll see what happens. But it looks like Congress is not yet convinced that the VA has solved their various internal problems enough to make this go forward. So that's kind of the other shoe that's waiting to drop as to whether or not they're going forward with the new appeals process starting in February or not. We'll have to wait and see. As we lawyers like to say, the jury's still out on that.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let me back up and ask you this. Where it comes to this thing with Congress and the Senate and stuff like that, in a situation like this where it passed Congress, but later on failed, they're able to recycle that and try again, correct?
Oh, absolutely. The Blue Water Act could well come up again. The real issue is that, like everything else, to get something through Congress, you have to have someone who's willing to really champion it. And I'm not sure that it's going to get the kind of support again that it got this time. Chairman Isaacson really was this was really his swan song. He desperately wanted to pass this bill, and he literally pulled in every political favor he had. Whether or not someone else will do that in the future is just an open question.
Sure. All right. All right. So let me ask you this. Has your firm participated in a significant case this year? Because I know, again, you and I know that you handle usually something pretty significant every year. What was a standout case or a significant case in your eyes for 2018?
Well, we've been lucky enough to be involved in a couple, but let me just mention one that we were not directly involved in, and that's the Copio case. As you know, the federal courts work in a hierarchy. There's typically a district court or in the cases we deal with, the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, and then you can appeal that to a higher court at the circuit court level, in this case, the federal circuit, and then the only appeal from that is to the Supreme Court. Well, the federal circuit has 12 active judges, and there's a special procedure in the federal circuit courts where if a case is deemed to be of importance, one or more judges can ask for, instead of the usual three-judge panel, the entire court, every single judge, to hear a particular case. And what happened this year is practically unheard of. The Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, on its own motion, what they call sua sponte, decided to hear a case en banc, the Procopio case. And, I mean, in my lifetime, I've been practicing law over 40 years. In my lifetime, I only know of one other time that a circuit court has on its own motion, gone en banc. So this is like a big deal.
Right.
And so they had an oral argument recently on this very issue of Blue Water Navy veterans. And the issue that they were parsing was the presumption that I talked about earlier is extended in a statute that says if you served within Vietnam, you get the presumption. And the argument that's being raised in Procopio is that if you served in Vietnam, that includes the territorial waters of Vietnam. You know, we in the United States, for example, we claim a territorial waters out 3 miles from the shore.
Sure.
And Vietnam has something similar. So the issue that's being raised in Procopio is that territorial boundaries of Vietnam ought to include its claimed waters, the territorial waters. So any ship that was within the territorial waters, 3 miles of the coast, would the servicemen on that would be included. And that was just argued, and it was an amazing argument. I think that the court is divided over the issue, but it seemed to me from the argument that there's a fair chance they are going to interpret the regulation to include those who served on the waters, despite Congress's failure to pass the Blue Water Sailors Act. So there may well be relief on the horizon for those folks, and that's probably, from my perspective, the most significant case, but not one we participated in. But we had a couple of good ones.
So I just want to clarify this, because this sounds almost too good to be true. So even if Congress is not able to uphold the Blue Water Act, I think is what you called it, this court case may take care of it without Congress's intervention.
Pretty much. The difference would be that under the Blue Water Sailors Act that they tried to pass, any Navy person who was assigned to Vietnam, regardless of the exact location of the ship, would be eligible.
Gotcha.
Under the argument in Procopio, it's only those ships that were within the territorial waters, but that's like 95%. So, you know,
in effect,
would replace the statute if the court decides in favor of it.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So I want to clarify that. Okay. So I mean, like you said, it's 95%. So that's good news. And I cut you off, so I apologize. You were saying you had a couple other cases that were kind of stand out for you.
Yeah, we were lucky enough that what happened was we had a case before the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims where we argued that the Board of Veterans Appeals had made a mistake by refusing to give our client a hearing. Ordinarily, if you appeal, you know, you start out with a decision at the regional office, you can go to the decision review officer, you appeal that to the Board of Veterans Appeals, and then if you're not totally exhausted by then, you can appeal to the Court of Veterans Claims. And what the issue was is the Board of Veterans Appeals, as you and I have talked about, has been under a lot of pressure to deal with their cases more speedily. And so one of the things that the board tried to do was to take a shortcut. And they said, well, okay, we heard this claim once before, and either the court remanded it or we remanded it, and now it's back to us. And so because we heard it once before, we're not going to give you another hearing. We're just going to issue a decision. And that's a big deal because the statistics show that if you have a hearing, your chances of winning at the board are 10% higher. Now, you know, any time you can increase your odds by 10%, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So in our case, Cook, we argued that to the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, and they said, yeah, board, you were wrong. You should have given Mr. Cook a hearing. So the VA was unhappy with that, excuse me, and so they appealed it to the Federal Circuit. And I think they're going to regret that, because at the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, we just argued that in the particular circumstances of our case, the person should have gotten a hearing. At the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, the argument was that every case should get a hearing if requested. And the Court of Appeals said, you know, we think that's what the statute says, by golly. So every case gets a hearing. So
nice.
I think the VA is going to regret that they didn't do that. But, yeah, Ken Carpenter and I went down for the argument, and it went very well, and we just got the decision recently. And so that was a big deal.
And that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that. That's huge. That is going to streamline it for a lot of veterans. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. I was happy that we could participate in that. The other one, you know, I don't take a lot of cases up to the Federal Circuit. I mean, most of our cases get resolved at the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. But we have this one poor lady who has a claim where her husband died unexpectedly of a heart attack shortly after coming back from Vietnam. And well, actually not shortly, but a few years after coming back from Vietnam. And so in 1984, she made a claim for benefits for his death. And the VA has two kinds of death benefits for veterans. There's a modest benefit if your husband, if the spouse's death was not connected to service, caused by service, and a larger benefit if it was connected to or caused by service. So she put in this claim, and they said, well, your husband's death is very sad, and unfortunately, you're not entitled to the modest non-service connected benefit because you have other income that's too high, so you don't get it. And they did not decide about whether his death was connected to service in that decision. And then later on, when she applied for burial benefits, they gave her the burial benefits and they said, and by the way, if your husband's death had been connected to service, we would have paid you at a higher rate for the burial benefits, but it wasn't. And so that was that. Then the Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit had this class action, the Niemer case, where they told the VA that they had not been properly applying the Agent Orange statute and that they had to go back and review all the thousands of cases that had been raised under Agent Orange and regarding Agent Orange under the presumption and redetermine them to make sure they'd done it right. And of course, they hadn't done it right in a lot of them. And so in my lady's case, when they went back, they said, okay, your husband died of ischemic heart disease, and so we're going to award service-connected benefits. And now this is 2009, not 1984. So my lady files an appeal saying, excuse me, but these benefits should go back to 1984, not 2009, because I claimed that my husband died and you never acted on my claim to decide whether it was service-connected. And the VA said, oh, no, you don't understand. When we said later on in the burial benefits that decision wasn't, that the death wasn't service-connected, that was an explicit determination of your claim for widow's benefits or service connection for his death. And explicit.
I like that.
So
okay.
We appealed that to the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, and to my amazement, the judge there said, oh, yeah, that's an explicit determination. So I was scratching my head, and I filed a motion to reconsider. And this time we got three judges, including the original one. And the third judge said, you know, guys, I don't really think this is correct. I don't see any explicit determination here. But she was in the minority. So we lost. So we appealed it to the Federal Circuit. And Ken and I just went down for argument recently, earlier this month. And the argument went very well, I have to say. And I think, based on the argument, that Our Lady is finally going to win her case. But, you know, you never know. But those were our big court cases for the year. The other big win that we had was at the Board of Veterans Appeals, which was very nice.
All right. So for the lady that you're fighting for there, if they come back and they say, yes, she's entitled to disability or not disability benefits, but she's entitled to benefits from 1984 until now, we're really talking a substantial amount of money. I mean, hundreds of thousands.
Yes, they started paying her in 2009. So it's 84 to 2009, which would amount.
Gotcha.
Based on the various amounts the rate was at each year over that time, it would amount to about $250,000. So that's why it's worth arguing about.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And here's the whole point. This is why it's so important for everybody to take notice. And if you have service members who maybe have been denied or are having problems getting benefits, then you need to reach out to Francis Jackson and his team for this exact reason. They are hanging their hat on whether or not this determination, this language is explicit or sufficient enough to call it an explicit determination. And for a layperson, this could be overwhelming. I mean, this lady, bless her heart, has been, you know, back to my earlier quote about patient and time. She's been very patient. She's been putting in the time, and but for the fact that that she has been this kind of a patient individual, and the fact that she connected with your law firm, she would be out literally thousands of dollars for her benefits that she's entitled to because her husband died for the service that he gave our country.
That's right. And Bert, we have one other one this year that I was even more proud of. We have a gentleman who served in the late 60s and took his case to the board on his own and got turned down actually repeatedly back before you could have an attorney represent you at the board. And we were able to go back on what's called a motion for clear and unmistakable error, meaning they got it so obviously wrong that they have to do it over. And we just got him an award of $600,000 for all the back years that he didn't get benefits. And I'm very proud of that.
Absolutely. So, again, that's a great example. Here's, you know, this is what cracks me up. And again, God bless America that they have this option of clear and unmistakable
error.
Thank you. You know, but here's a gentleman who served our country and he's not allowed an attorney to represent him in what is sometimes can be a very complicated, convoluted situation. I mean, anytime that a layperson has to go before a court, has to go before an administrative process, you know, this is something that most people, it's not normal for them. They're out of their water. And I want to use this as a tiny example. I was before a judge. I had gotten a parking citation, which I didn't agree with. And so I went, I went before the judge and the police officer is there to fight it and all this other stuff. But the case before me, this gentleman had gotten a citation for expired registration and expired plates. And, you know, this is kind of a lot of these judges have are either not really lawyers or they have minimal legal training. And anyway, the judge that we had really liked to use legal jargon. And so this guy gets up there and the judge says, well, you know, based on the evidence and prima facie this and blah, 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 I find you guilty, but I'm going to suspend your sentence because you got all this stuff taken care of. Of course, the layperson, all he heard was, I found you guilty. And he went off. And unfortunately, he lost his patience. And unfortunately, he started using foul language directed to the judge, which is not good. But my point being is, this guy does not know the language that the court was using, that the judge was using, and therefore he thought he was in trouble. He thought that he had been found guilty, which I guess technically he was, but he did not know what a suspended sentence was and that he was not going to have to pay anything. And this is a simple traffic citation. Could you imagine you have somebody in front of a administrative situation or a court situation where they're talking about disability benefits and they're talking about all these different nuances and they're talking about, you know, some of the language that you and I just talked about, you know, this, you know, explicit determination and this and that. And you have to go before the situation without any legal help. It just boggles the mind that, you know, our government would do that, and luckily they ended up changing that. But, you know, there's literally probably tens of thousands of veterans that gave up on their benefits because they were denied without the access to an attorney. And that just infuriates me.
Well, sadly, it's true, Bert, and that's why we try to help as many folks as we can.
Yeah, so congratulations. That is an awesome, awesome turn of events. That's great for this gentleman who was awarded $600,000 after how many years of fighting? Five, six, ten?
We've been representing him since 2006. So what's that, 12 years?
12 years. 12 years. And
I think also he had something there with patience and time.
So, but you know what? This is why I want everybody here to understand how important this is and why they need to share this episode with everybody. With everybody they can, because it's important. Our veterans come home and, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, maybe 20%, maybe it's 30% that have to go through all this extra time and work to get their disability benefits. Francis, do you have any idea what the percentage is of veterans that need help? Is it 30, 40%, 20%? Any idea?
Bert, it's really hard to tease that out from the government statistics, but I would think 30 would not be a bad guess.
Yeah, yeah, I think we're being fairly nice there, and so again, for everybody, you can just see how difficult it can be, and for a lot of our veterans, they were denied. And I don't know if I'm using this correctly. They were certainly denied access to an attorney. And to me, that's a denial of due process. And this is something that the government does because they're trying to conserve funds and they're trying, you know, they're trying to make it as easy for themselves as possible to deny claims. And so for a while there, veterans could not get an attorney to help them out. So if you guys have been in that boat and you feel that you need some help, Francis Jackson is the guy to reach out to. And you can go to disabilitybenefitslaw.com, disabilitybenefitslaw.com. So those are some awesome cases there. Let me ask you this. What do you see in the horizon for veterans as we move forward?
In all honesty, Bert, I think it's more the same. I mean, the reality is that Congress has promised veterans a lot, but they're not putting the money behind it that's necessary to take the steps to get there. What I'm seeing is that even the cases that are being processed under this new process that they have, what the VA has done is, as we mentioned earlier, there's this new law that's supposed to go in next year. And in an attempt to expedite things, the VA set up by its own administrative regulations sort of a similar process that they call the Rapid Appeals Modernization Program, or RAMP, sort of as an introduction to the new law to kind of get them on board. And what they did was they set some pretty ambitious goals. Every new claim was going to be processed in 125 days and so on and so forth. Anyway, what they've found is that even under this process, where all they were doing is inviting veterans who had existing appeals to participate in the program, they already are sufficiently understaffed that they can't hit their 125-day targets. And that's before they put in the new statute. So I think what's going to happen, Bert, is that we're going to just see more of the same. The obvious claims are going to get paid. The more subtle claims or more difficult claims, people are just going to get turned down and they're going to need our help. That's the way it looks to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing's going to change anytime soon. And I think that probably the part of the issue here is that we have so many people who are in the decision power process, for lack of better terms, that unfortunately have never served. And when you have somebody who's never served, whose family's never been affected by veterans' disability. They unfortunately look at it purely by the numbers, and they can, you know, it's easy to justify, hey, you know, we're paying too much to our veterans, but a veteran would never say that. Somebody who served this country would never say that. And unfortunately, you know, the way I see it is that you have a lot of people in the middle who have never served. And that's one of the reasons that this is going to be a forever problem.
I think that's true, Bert.
Well, Francis, I want to say again, thank you so much to you and your team for helping our veterans, for coming on the show and educating our listeners to what's happening to our veterans. And I want to give out the website one more time, because it's important for everybody to go out there. And you know what? Even if you're not having any problems and right now you don't know of anybody, just remember disabilitybenefitslaw.com, disabilitybenefitlaw.com, and get, you know, and should you come across somebody that needs help, refer them to Francis Jackson and his team. And Francis, I want to thank you so much for taking care of our people, and wishing you and your team and your family some wonderful holidays.
Well, thanks, Bert. Same to you. And I just, let me put in an unabashed plug that our new website is veteransbenefits.com.
Veteransbenefits.com. Even better, veteransbenefits.com. Even easier to remember, veteransbenefits.com. Francis Jackson, thank you so much for stopping by.
Happy holidays to you, Bert.
All righty. Good stuff there from Francis Jackson. This guy and his team are literally in the front lines of helping our veterans, right? Veteransbenefits.com. Veteransbenefits.com. Let's share this program with everyone you know. Let's help as many people and their families as we can help. Veteransbenefits.com. This is so important. There is no reason why our veterans and their families should suffer, that they should not access the benefits they deserve. And some of these people suffer in silence. In other words, they're not going to tell you that they're in pain. They're not going to tell you that they've been cheated by the government, for lack of better terms. So if you know of a veteran, let them know about this program, share it with them. Maybe they don't need any help. Maybe they're getting all the benefits they deserve, but you know what? They're going to know somebody who isn't. And during this holiday season, what a better time to reach out, share this program with everybody you know. Let's help as many people to get the benefits they deserve, to be aware of this problem so we can rectify it, so we can hold Congress accountable to our brave men and women and their families. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.